Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on diet when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. John Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Well, Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. You know it and I know it, he said. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions. And if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now you know that, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks, and they pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program and the New World Order, the men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, Vanderbilts, Kissingers. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this Global 2000 and Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my four-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Diet. You know, when we talk about diet, we think in terms of losing weight. At least that's what comes to my mind. When somebody mentions the word diet, immediately I say to myself, oh, I'm fat and I need to lose weight. And my wife says, hey, Gordon, you're fat. Why don't you quit eating? Quit stuffing your face. Why don't you lose some weight? Well, that's what comes to my mind. But diet's a little bit bigger topic than that. And the other day, my wife went up to the Acres Convention, brought back a bunch of material. One of the things that she brought back was a videotape called Pottinger's Cats. Pottinger's Cats. You may never have heard the name Pottinger. The guy's name was Frank Pottinger. He's a pretty famous guy back in the 1920s and 30s. And he took a bunch of cats and he fed them pasteurized milk on the one hand and raw milk on the other. He fed these cats raw meat on the one hand and cooked meat on the other. And then he observed these cats for four generations. And then what was the outcome of the cats that were drinking raw milk versus pasteurized milk and raw meat versus cooked meat? And then he kind of mixed and matched some cats in there. Instead of giving them the raw milk versus pasteurized milk, he gave them a couple other kinds. One was a canned milk. What do you call that stuff? Condensed, sweetened condensed milk. He tried some cats on that, see how they'd fare out over three or four generations. He gave them some pet milk, just canned milk, you know, called condensed milk. And he took a look at them, and what was the results of that? And I thought, well, after I saw this, just a little 20-minute show, wasn't a great big deal. But it fit right in with what Joe Wallach had been saying in his books, Rare Earths, and I reviewed that book here some time past. If you want to take a look at it, look at Rare Earths here in our archives, and you'll see that Joe Wallach has looked at foods, and he says there's 92 food elements that you have to have. And if you don't have just one of those 92 food elements that you need, you will suffer from some kind of a symptom. Something will show up in your body and it'll tell you that you're short this vitamin or mineral. Now, they fall into these four groups. They're enzymes, essential fatty acids, vitamins, and minerals. And that's what Wallach reported. And he said there's 92 of them, and you need to have these. And a lot of us, you know, we take vitamin pills. I do. And that's because I know that the food that I buy over here in the grocery store, it doesn't have all of the vitamins and minerals that it ought to have, or that it would have if it was grown on good organic soil. So Pottinger, he took these groups of cats, and then he took a look at them. They were good and healthy cats, you know, just normal, everyday, garden variety house cats. And he fed them this diet, and then during the course of about a year, these cats had kittens. And he noticed that the cats that were on pasteurized milk, their offspring were smaller, and they were a little different structurally. And they weren't as heavy. They didn't thrive as well. They were still, you know, pretty good cats, you know, but they just weren't as healthy, strong, and vigorous as the group that was on the raw milk and the raw meat, raw foods. So then he took the cats that were the offspring of these original healthy cats, first generation cats, and he bred them. And a year later, they took a look at those offspring, and they found that there were deformities in them. They had deformities as they were growing and as they were living their lives and developing. They had abscesses in their teeth. They had teeth that were falling out. They had cavities in their teeth. Their cranial structures were malformed. A lot of them died young. They noticed that when they were feeding them pasteurized milk and homogenized milk and cooked meat and so on, that the cats didn't live a full life. They just die suddenly. They were having heart attacks. And so they went on to the third generation, and they got worse and worse. And then they got to the fourth generation, and they couldn't reproduce. Fourth generation couldn't reproduce, and they were having a tremendous problem with the cats, the offspring of these originally healthy cats, four generations later. And they were really acting bizarre. They were acting kind of strange. They didn't have their balance. You know, a cat, when you hold the cat upside down and drop it, he'll flip right over and land on his feet every time. These cats would land on their backs or on their sides. They didn't have good coordination. And they were nervous, fidgety, that insomnia. They couldn't sleep. They got restless and wild, aggressive. Sometimes they would get to be passive. They just lay there. Sometimes they... Depending upon the cats in the first, second, third, and fourth generation. First generation were normal. Then they said, well, how do we bring these cats back? So they took some of these weak, sick cats, and they changed their diets over. They took these weak, sickly cats that had bad balance and one thing and another. They started feeding those cats raw milk and raw meat, and they recovered. That was the amazing thing. When they changed their diets, it took some effort. It wasn't easy. It wasn't that they just changed their diets and presto magico the next day, you know, like getting an order out of McDonald's, you know, drive-through window. It took a couple of 3 years, and it took a couple of generations to get them back to normal, but they came back to normal. That was the amazing part. And so here's the bottom line to the Pottinger cat study of the 1920s and 30s, and that is diet is essential to health. I mean, it's just that simple. Now, modern allopathic medicine and modern big business, they would have us believe that you can eat potato chips and pretzels and Coca-Cola, and it doesn't make any difference. There's no difference between pretzels and Coca-Cola and raw milk and broccoli. And the pretzels and the Coke taste a lot better, and so, you know, why don't you enjoy yourself while you're eating, because everybody has to eat. Now, I've reported before, and I'm going to report it again, that when I was a kid, now I'm an old man now, you know, old and full of years, as they say in biblical terms. You know, he was old and full of years, and I'm one of those. I'm old and full of years. And I'm looking back, and I'm thinking back to the first grade, and there wasn't one single kid in the first grade in 1944 at Corbell School, first grade, that was fat or overweight. Not a one. Not a one. Now, I went to the Marshall School in the second grade. That was in Eureka, California, and there was one fat kid in there. His name was Franklin. Just one. He wasn't really fat. I mean, you know, he was chunky. By today's standards, if you saw Franklin today, you'd say there's just a normal, healthy, you know, well-fed kid. But looking at the rest of the children, you know, when I was in the second grade, you know, he was a fat kid, and he was a little more than just chunky or pleasingly plump. But as I went through school, and I'm talking about now, you get clear up to the high school. In our high school class, there were a few students there that were pretty chunky. None that were obese. We didn't have any obesity. I mean, that's where you got fat, you know, rolling off of the fat that rolls off of the fat. We didn't have anything like that. But we did have some pretty chunky guys. And they typically played football, and they ran around a little bit. You know, they acted kind of normal. But it certainly as a percentage couldn't have been more than 1 or 2 or maybe 3 percentage points max that you would have said, hey, these guys have a real weight problem over here. Today, just looking at the paper, listening to Katie Couric, every once in a while she reports that there's an obesity problem in America. It's an epidemic. 27% of Americans are overweight, and there's a big chunk of those that are just really obese. I mean, they're just, you know, life-threatening problems that they have. And so I thought I would report to you that that's caused by diet. Very, very simple. It's what these people are putting into their mouths. Now, you take a guy or a woman here that weighs 300-400 pounds. Every one of those 300 or 400 pounds got on that guy through his mouth. You ever think about that? He put that whole 400 pounds of fat on him, that whole body mass went right through his mouth. And depending upon what he ate, it depended upon, you know, whether or not this guy put on a lot of fat or not. Now, there's a number of things that cause this fat. And processed foods seem to be right up at the top of the list. Now, I don't want you to change your diet. I mean, I'm not a dietitian. I didn't come on the air here to tell you that you need to change your diet, and you got the wonderful Gordon diet. See, they got the Atkins diet, and they got this diet, and they got that diet. Hell, I could come along with the Gordon diet. And I could say that you people ought to eat flies and grasshoppers, and I come up with a real neat diet over here. And you know, I'd get rich if I did that. I would make millions of dollars. I just has to come up with something that's really wild and off the wall. It's got to be something really stupid that doesn't make any sense at all. And if I could come up with something that was outlandish, like don't eat any carbohydrates or bread, just eat meat and protein. Or if I said, don't eat any meat, don't eat any protein, all you got to do is just eat carbohydrates. Or if I said, don't eat any of this, but eat all of that. See, I could get rich, I could get famous, especially if I recommended Coca-Cola and Krispy Kremes. I mean, you just can't beat a diet of Coca-Cola and Krispy Kreme donuts. And if I would come out with a diet, write a book, and then go to Oprah Winfrey and say, hey, let me on your TV program so I can plug my book, or get on Letterman. Why, I'd become rich and famous overnight. Whether or not it works, and it obviously doesn't work, because what we're talking about in America is that all of these people who are fat, almost 100% of them report that they have been on a diet. And that they were on the diet and they lost weight, and then they couldn't stay on the diet, and so they got off the diet, and then they gained the weight back, and then a little bit to boot. And then they went on to some other diet and they lost some weight, and then they got tired of that, and so they went on to a third diet, and so on. These people are all depressed. And I thought I would report to you as an old timer. I was up to Yellowstone some years back, and I took a look at the buffalo up there, and they were all in good condition, but there was not a single obese buffalo. Didn't see a single one. The only time I see obesity in animals is when they're in the laboratory. And they put them in a laboratory, and they'll feed rats or mice or hamsters or something, guinea pigs, and they'll feed them this particular diet. And here's this mouse, just fat as a butterball. I mean, just really obnoxious looking critter, laying there in the box, can't hardly move, just fat as a pig. You know how a pig gets fat? Now, a pig is the only fat animal that I know of. Now, there may be more animals that are fat, but wild pigs aren't fat. Have you ever noticed these wild pigs over in Africa? Why, they're just lean and mean. But now, here in America, we feed them grain and we get them real fat, and that's the sign of success when you've got this fat pig. And we do that with cattle. We feed them a lot of grain, and we call them fat cattle, or Charolais and Whiteface and Brangus and Santa Gertrudis and a few of those breeds like that. They're called fat cattle, and we've bred these cattle out now so that we can get this marbling in their meat. And so when you go down to Steak and Ale and you order a prime rib, you know, you take a look at that thing, and it's just full of fat. That's why I always order the end cut, so I can get the burned piece on the end away from the fat and the marbling in the middle. And you typically get a piece of meat that doesn't have all that fat in it. Or if it does, the fat's been pretty well cooked out of it. But the moral to the story is that Americans like fat. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but twice in the Bible, God tells you not to eat fat. And he's talking about diet, D-I-E-T, diet. In Leviticus 3, verse 17, there's a little story here. Let me read this to you. And Americans don't practice this law, but if they did, they'd probably have a whole lot less fat. It'll be a perpetual. It shall be a perpetual statute for your generations throughout all of your dwellings, that you eat neither fat nor blood. Don't eat any fat, and don't eat any blood. Now, Americans, per se, don't eat very much blood. Over here in Leviticus 7, verse 22, the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, you speak unto the children of Israel, saying, you shall eat no manner of fat of ox or of sheep or of goat. And the fat of the beast that dies of itself, and the fat of that which is torn with beasts, may be used in any other use. You could make candles out of it. You could make an axle grease with it if you wanted to. But you know, he told you don't eat it. Now, when you go into McDonald's and you eat a hamburger, you're eating 30% fat by law. I see the McDonald's people and the Swift and company and the ADMs and Cargills, they all get together, these big food companies, the manufacturers, and they go to the legislature, the government, they go to the FDA and the Department of Agriculture with their lobbyists, and they get legislation enacted. And the legislation requires by law that there be no more than 30% fat. Now, these two statutes here tell you pretty plainly not to eat any fat. None. Zero. Zilch. Now, somebody's going to say, well, you got to have fat in your diet. Well, that's true. I agree that there's got to be some fat. But if you conscientiously exclude fat from your diet, you'll get more than you need just by eating naturally and normally. And that's what I'm suggesting here, is that you don't find out in the wild, you don't find fat animals. Now, it is true you'll find animals that are in good condition, but morbidly obese is not an animal that you're going to find out in the wild. I've never seen a morbidly obese deer. or a morbidly obese coon, or a morbidly obese, you know, elk or moose or buffalo. And you don't find morbidly obese Jersey cows. Now, you'll find some that are in pretty good shape. We like to say, use the word fat. Boy, that cow is fat. That's a fat cow. The truth of the matter is they're in good condition, but they're anything but fat. Certainly not like a pig. Certainly not like a human. Morbidly obese. Now, I'm not here to make fun of you, so if you're morbidly obese, you got a problem. I don't deny that. But you can overcome that problem if you knew what caused it. Now, you can go on these crazy diets, and I got to tell you, this Joel Wallach wrote a heck of a good book. I reviewed his book. It's called Rare Earths. And Wallach is the guy that says the reason that you get sick is because you're poisoned or starving. And if you're fat, you're starving to death. That's your big problem. All fat people are starving to death. And they're starving because they don't have the essential 92 elements that they need that would shut off their cravings for food. Now, here's the way this works. Let's suppose that you're eating bananas. I always like to use bananas because this is the acid test. You ever notice sometimes you get real hungry for something? Once in a while, I get real hungry for a banana. Bananas are just loaded with, I think it's potassium. And this potassium, you know, is good for you, and you got to have it. And if you don't have it, you're going to develop some kind of a symptom, kind of like scurvy. See, if you don't have enough vitamin C, you develop scurvy. And if you don't have enough vitamin D, you develop pellagra. If you don't have enough of this vitamin or mineral or something else, you develop some kind of a symptom. And then you get this symptom, it causes pain typically. And so you say, well, I got to go to the doctor or the dentist and have him take care of this. So this guy, Joel Wallach, he comes onto the scene over here and he takes a look at food and he takes a look at disease. And he's a veterinarian. And he puts these two and two together. Now, veterinarians work differently than medical doctors. They don't use a whole lot of drugs. They use more diet to cure and to keep your animals healthy. They use penicillin. They use some drugs from time to time. But primarily, we try to keep our animals from getting diseased by giving them a mineral block. And this mineral block is full of minerals. It's got all these trace elements in it. And these trace elements over here are the things that you've got to have to keep you from getting these various and sundry symptoms. Let me give you a couple of illustrations here. If you're looking at minerals, let's take a look at vitamin E. A major antioxidant, vitamin E is. It becomes part of the membrane structure of cells, protecting them from oxidation by free radicals. Especially important in protecting cells and lungs from oxidation by environmental pollutants such as ozone. It protects immune cells, strengthening immunity. It's an important protective agent from diseases like cancer. It's lost in food by heat and oxidation. It's found in all foods containing polyunsaturated fats, vegetable oils, as long as it's not rancid, nuts, seeds, legumes, grains, and some leafy green vegetables. Now, that's just one. Out of these 92, I'm not going to go through all 92. Hang on. Don't get panicky now and say, oh my God, this guy's going to sit here and make me listen to this kind of tripe. And you don't want to listen to that, and neither do I. Neither do I. If I had to sit here and figure out every time I picked up an apple or an orange, or I sit down and I want to butter my bread, and I got to figure out, do I have enough vitamin E, F, potassium, niacin, iron, in all of these foods? You know, cows don't do that. A cow goes out in the field and she eats grass. But I want to tell you that cows don't eat just grass. Well, cows that aren't sick. Sick cows eat just grass, but cows that are in good health, they eat all kinds of things. Now, I'm an old-timer, and I watch my cows and been watching them for years. And I can be sitting down here in my pickup and just watching cows. And if they're out here in a natural pasture, not just grass, but pasture that's got weeds in it, fence row, it's got cedar trees and oak trees and brush and all kinds of things. And you're watching over here in a cow, she'll go over to a weed and she'll eat a couple of bites off of that weed. And then that cow, she'll go over maybe to a cedar tree and she'll take a bite off of that cedar tree. Now, cows don't eat cedar. You know, as a general rule, you don't run around seeing your cedar trees all eaten up by the cows, but they'll take a bite from one once in a while. They eat the berries off the cedar and the cedar needles, and they'll eat acorns off the ground, and they'll eat oak leaves. I've seen them reach up there and take a mouthful of oak leaves and chew them up and so on. And here's what's going on here. All of these various plants have different vitamins and minerals in them. For instance, there's a plant that we call pigweed here. Pigweed. Lamb's quarter is another name. And more than likely, if you were a real botanist, you know, you'd come up with some Latin term, you know, that you could hang on this. But it's just a crummy weed. Now, this lamb's quarter has more calcium in it three times. 317% more calcium in it than does spinach. Now, you know, normal people go to the grocery store and they buy spinach. We don't. Here, we go out into the garden where there's all of this free-growing pigweed, and we just pick the leaves off of it, and you can take it in and you can just pour salad dressing on it and just eat it straight, raw, or you can cook it. You can cook it just like spinach, and then you can eat it just like you're eating greens, like poke and spinach and kale and various other vegetables, if you desire. Now, the reason I point that out to you is because the cattle, left to themselves, will eat lamb's quarter, poke, cedar berries, oak leaves, weeds of all kinds, along with their grass and clover and alfalfa and all the good stuff that they like. Now, this cow may eat 90% grass, but it's that 10% that gives her the vitamins and minerals that she needs. And the cow never gets fat, she never gets obese, and she's always in good health. I've never had a cow with dental caries. I've never had to call the vet out and say, my God, I've got to have some fillings put in this cow, and this one over here needs a bridge, and this one over here's got to have two teeth extracted. None of that goes on here. You don't find that with wild deer, and in fact, you don't find that with native human populations either. Now, not only was there a guy by the name of Pottinger who demonstrated this, but he had a buddy. I guess we'd call him a buddy. And his name was Weston A. Price. And they still got a foundation or an institute or something. And it's down in San Diego, California, I believe it is. It's called the Price Pottinger Foundation. And they're still dinking around, you know, with nutrition and health and health issues. Not that it makes any difference, because you probably never heard of Weston A. Price or Francis Pottinger, but you've heard of Coca-Cola, and you've heard of Atkins, and you've heard of Pizza Hut and McDonald's. In fact, in tests, you know, with little children can recognize Ronald McDonald. I mean, they're talking about kids worldwide. You can take a little Japanese kid or a Chinese kid, and he recognizes Ronald McDonald. Now, who is this Weston A. Price? Who's this Francis Pottinger? Now, people believe what they hear on radio and television and what they see in print. And so we know this. As salesmen, we all know this. So what we do is we put our story in print. Now, I could be sitting here lying to you, see? And you would believe me because this guy's on the radio. I heard this on the radio. I heard this on the news. I heard this here or there. But what makes you think that because you heard it from Katie Couric that she's telling you the truth? Is it because Katie Couric never lies? Katie Couric always has all of the facts, never makes a mistake, and is always telling you the truth. Never, without fail, does she fail to tell you the truth. How about the President of the United States? You know, he gets news conferences. Tony Snow comes out there and he says, well, President Bush said this and such. Well, what makes you think that President Bush has always got the facts straight, like weapons of mass destruction or atomic weapons programs going on in Iraq or Iraq or Iran or someplace? I just throw that out there for your consideration, because you know as well as I do that if Tony Snow tells you that and you see that in a news conference on the Lair News Hour, you believe it. You accept it. But now, if your mother or your grandmother came to you and she told you this story that I'm telling you, you would not listen to your mother or your grandmother, because a prophet, no prophet, has any honor in his own country. That's an old biblical proverb, got it from Jesus himself. He said, no, nobody's going to listen to you if you're one of the local kids, because we know you. And we know that you can't know anything, because we're just as smart as you, and if we don't know it, you can't know it. But now that Katie Couric, now she's something else. See, we don't know her. Oprah Winfrey. If Oprah tells us that this is the way it is, it's got to be that way, because we don't know Oprah personally. But you know your Aunt Bessie and your Uncle Buster, you know them, and so if they tell you something, it can't be true. So we like to listen to paid professionals. Well, we read books from paid professionals on diet. And if you're overweight, you have dieted. You've tried to lose weight and you couldn't lose weight, and you tested it. You lost some pounds and gained it all back. That's what nearly everybody reports. There's some exceptions to the rule, I'll grant you that. But the exceptions are very rare. I mean, we're talking 90% of people, you know, they test this diet thing. A few succeed. It's like winning in Las Vegas. A few win. Most people go there and lose. And that's where they're at with diets. Most people who go on a diet to lose weight lose. And they end up being fatter and heavier than they were before they started the diet. Now, before we go any further here, let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and The Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications that we cite here on The Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by The Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, tonight we're talking about diet. When we think of diet, we think about losing weight. Truth of the matter is, wouldn't you be better off if you didn't gain the weight to start with? Now, in the Bible, there are 18 health laws. 18 health laws. And if you followed these 18 health laws, you would live your life from birth to death. You would never get sick one single time. And you would never get fat if you followed those health laws. And in order for you to get sick, you have to violate one or more of those health laws. I mean, that's just where reality's at. Now, there's another aspect, or there's another contingency that feeds into this, and that's called poisoning, toxicity. You can live in Los Angeles and breathe the air in Los Angeles and practice all 18 of these health laws, and you will get sick because you're in violation of one of those laws, one of those laws that tells you to keep clean and fast. See, fasting will cleanse your body. Did you notice that Jesus, from time to time, he fasted? And the reason that he was fasting was that when you eat, 75% of your body energy goes to digesting your food. So there's a law here that deals with detoxification, which is done by fasting, which of course nobody does or nobody would want to do. That is going without food, and in some cases without water for a period of time, 1, 2, 3 days, something like that. Or you may want to fast with juice or something for a week or two. I knew a guy one time that was on a fast for 37 days on just juices. He was overweight, and he lost about 100 pounds in 37 days. Of course, he went to a clinic, and they used fasting, and he detoxified. He said, God, I never felt so good in my life when he got through with that fasting. And then he went back to eating the way he had always ate before. Now, look, if you're already fat, then it's obvious that whatever your diet was, whatever it is that you eat, made you the way you are. Did that ever enter your mind? Think about it for a minute. I mean, let's suppose you weigh 300 pounds. Hey, kid, all that 300 pounds got onto your frame through your mouth. You know, it was what you stuck in there. Now, there's other people that were born at the same time that you were, and they don't weigh 300 pounds. And they were sticking food in their mouth, but they didn't stick in as much. Or they metabolized it a little bit differently. Now, I've seen guys, you know, hard-working guys, and they'll sit there and really chow down, and they can eat a lot of food. You've probably seen people like that. And they're skinny as a rail. And that's because their body metabolizes the food a little better. But, you know, there's differences in people, and I don't doubt that, and I don't deny it, and I'm not criticizing you if you're a little overweight, but I'm pointing out to you that all of it got on you, and you put it there. And we've got these 18 health laws over here, and they cover this thing of bad environment. Now, I think if I lived in Los Angeles, I think I would think about moving out of there. The air down there isn't fit to drink. And it's about thick enough to drink, isn't it? And then you've got bad water down there filled with fluoride and chlorine. Of course, you've got fluoride and chlorine and water supplies all over America. But here's what happens. You take in these poisons, and these poisons have to have a place to go, so your body creates fat to store these toxins. Did you know that? So if you're in a toxic environment, your body will try to take care of those toxins, because if there's no place to store the toxin, then it's got to go to your liver. And liver failure gets to be fatal in short order. So your body, designed this way, by the way, by a creator, a designer, master designer, God, we call him typically God, or Allah, or Buddha, or whatever you want to call him, He designed your body, so he's a pretty good designer, so that it would put on fat and then store those toxins in that fat until such time as you can get rid of them. Now, there's a couple of three ways you can get rid of these toxins. You can get rid of them with activated charcoal, or you can get rid of them by fasting. Fasting isn't quite as pleasant, I guess I should say. Probably just as good, but not quite as pleasant as activated charcoal. And so this guy, Joel Wallach, he points out in his book, Rare Earths, there, that, you know, if your body is full of these toxins over here, you need to detoxify. Got to get rid of these poisons. And so you people that are fat are full of poison. You're full of chlorine, fluoride, and 55 other toxins and poisons. And your body's got a defense mechanism against those poisons, and that is to put on this fat. Now, you couldn't put on this fat unless you had some food to do it. And so your food over here also has a lot to do. What kind of food are you eating? Now, if we could eat clean food and live in a non-toxic environment, you know, like Yellowstone Park's a pretty good place for buffalo to live, and they eat non-toxic natural food, you know, food that hasn't been processed, you don't find buffalo eating hydrogenated vegetable oil. You don't find them chowing down on Folgers coffee, you know, creamed by non-dairy creamer with 3 or 4 teaspoons of CNH pure cane sugar along with 2 Krispy Kreme donuts. Now, you haven't seen that, have you? Now, human beings eat that way, and then human beings have tooth decay. You don't see any tooth decay in the native buffalo population. And this guy, Weston A. Price, made the same observation when he traveled around the world back here, you know, again in the early 20th century. He would go to out-of-the-way places, you know, like Tibet and Nepal, or to the Ituri rainforest of the old Belgian Congo, or up into the tops of the Andes Mountains, and he would actually live there with native groups of people. He was a little different kind of guy. People do that today. They go out, you know, for a day or two, and they take a look at a group of people and take notes and ask questions, and then they go on their way. But this guy, Price, was a little different. He actually lived with these people and ate the food that they ate for months on end. And then he would observe them. He would look in their mouths and say, "Well, would it be all right with you if I looked at your teeth?" Now, here he is in Nepal, and he's looking at some native Sherpa up here in Nepal, and he says, "How old are you?" And the guy says, "Well, I'm 65. And he looks in his mouth, and the guy's got all of his teeth and no cavities. And he says, "Well, how do you feel?" And the guy says, "Well, I feel pretty good. Do you have any stiffness in your joints?" And the guy looks at him like, "What's stiffness in your joints? What is that?" See, we can quantify that and call that rheumatoid arthritis, or we can call it neuralgia, or we got labels that we hang on the symptoms that we suffer from. And he says to this guy, the Sherpa up there in Nepal, he says, "Well, now, what do you eat?" And the guy looks at him and says, "Well, what do you mean, what do I eat? I eat food, you know, I eat just like everybody else." Now, see, Price, he's from New York City. See, Price is from Chicago and Los Angeles, and he knows what real food is. He knows what Krispy Kremes and Coca-Cola and CNH pure cane sugar and Pillsbury all-white flour is. I mean, this guy in Nepal, he hasn't got a clue. You ask him about white flour, and he looks at you with a dumb blank stare. You ask him if he drinks Coca-Cola, and he says, "Huh?" You ask him about CNH pure cane sugar, and he looks at you like, you know, "I never heard of this kind of stuff. Where does it come from? Does it grow on a tree?" Now Price is watching these people, and here's what he observed. He says they're eating foods that are raw foods. You know, like the guy eats peaches, but he doesn't eat canned peaches. He eats peaches in season when they're raw peaches. He eats berries. But he doesn't eat canned berries, you know, like civilized people do. You know, civilized people, when you want to put on a fruit salad, ladies, you go to the Kroger store and you buy a can of peaches and a can of pears and a can of berries and a can of this and a can of that. You know, and you put all this stuff together, open the cans, you stick them in here, and you put some Ready Whip on the top of it, and there's a fruit salad. Ready Whip. Now, this Sherpa, now he probably has a little whipped cream once in a while. You know, they go out and milk the cow, bring the milk in the house. That's what we do here. And then the next morning, the milk, you know, is separated from the cream. The cream rises to the top, and so I scoop off the cream and I put that in a separate jar. I always measure a guy's wealth by his cream in his refrigerator. When I visit people, you know, I look in their refrigerator and I say, "How much cream do you have in here, Bob?" And he says, "Huh? Cream. How much cream do you have in your refrigerator?" No, look at me. "Oh, I don't have any cream. Do you want some cream, George?" No, I don't want any. I just wanted to see how wealthy you were. I can see you're poor as a church mouse. You don't have any cream in your refrigerator. Now, here, I carry a gallon of cream in my refrigerator at all times. I try to have a gallon of cream, Jersey cream. I mean thick cream, you know, comes right off the top of the milk jar. And then my wife takes that and she whips it up and then she puts it on my pumpkin pie, see, or something like that. And I have real cream on my pumpkin pie. People look at me and say, "My God, you ought to be fat as a pig." Well, I'm not fat as a pig, and because I eat pretty natural foods. You know, I eat meat and potatoes and lamb's quarter, and I try to eat fruits in season and one thing and another. And I'm pointing this out to you, and this is what Weston A. Price found, is that the people who ate the native natural foods, whether they lived in the Andes Mountains or in the Himalaya Mountains, or whether they were in the Aituri Rainforest or they were the Eskimos up on the north slope of Alaska, those people didn't have any tooth decay. They didn't have cancer, heart attack. And oftentimes they found, and there's about five or six places in the world where they have a pretty long life, you know, like the Hunzas, you know, and various other groups. And these people would have more people that were 100 years old than any place else. Well, except, of course, in Russia. Russia, you know, they've got the most of everything and the bestest. I'm not sure if everything that we hear that comes out of Russia is necessarily the truth, but, you know, if you're looking for a guy that lived to be 167 years old, well, he's in Russia. Okay, but now leaving that aside, you know, getting down here to just normal, everyday garden variety people, the God of the Bible, the God of the Hebrews, said that he would give us 70 years. I know people will oftentimes contradict that, and they say, oh, no, that's not true. Why, 120 years, that's the normal lifespan of man. I don't think so. I'm dubious of that. Over here in about Psalm 90, something like that, Psalm 90, verse 10. The days of our years are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. We die. So you're entitled to 70 years under the terms of our contract that you'll see in Exodus 23, verse 26. That's 70 years. And then if you happen to reach 80, 80, because you're strong, healthy, then that's good. That's good. Now, there's a record here in the Bible of people that lived to be 300, 400, 500, 700, 900 years old prior to the flood. And then after the flood, you'll see their lifespans begin to degenerate. Shem lived to be 600 years old, but his daddy lived to be 900. David, you know, old King David, he was a pretty good guy. He lived to be 70. He got his 70. Didn't get 80, just 70. And there's Abraham. Now, he lived to be 175. And then Moses lived to be 120. Jacob lived to be 110. Jacob, I guess, he lived to be about 147. And his boy Joseph lived to be 110. Something on that order. And once in a while today, you hear of some guy that lives to be 100 or 110 or 120. I heard of some French lady the other day lived to be 120. But boys and girls, those are rarities. And while that might occur from time to time, and I'm watching Jack LaLanne now. I want to see if Jack LaLanne lives to be 120, because he's in his 90s. Old Jack is. And old Jack, you know, he's heavy on exercise and diet, and he's skinny as a rail. I saw him on TV not too long ago. Jack LaLanne, hell, he was an old man when I was a kid. Well, let's just figure it out. If he's 90 or 92 or 3 now, and I'm 70, you know, he's 22 or 3 or 5 years older. I mean, he was 25 years old when I was born. And I'm old and full of years now. So Jack LaLanne, you know, was an old man, you know, from my perspective when I was a kid. Now, that tells you a little something. Now, most of you are sitting out there saying, yeah, but I want to live to be 90, but I don't want to work. I got a kid like that, you know. He's so lazy, he's got hair growing on the palms of his hands. But you know, if you're not opposed to work and a little sweat, you know, and you get out there and you exercise a little bit. Now, I'm an old man, but I go out and dig post holes and stretch a little wire and build a little this and build a little that. And that's because exercise is pretty good for you. A little work never hurt anybody. And so I'm in pretty good health. I don't have arthritis. I don't wear glasses. I don't have a hearing aid. And, you know, I don't get colds and I don't get the flu and I don't eat Krispy Kremes. I don't suck Cokes. And a lot of times I gotta tell you a little story here. The other day I got a semi load of hay in. And the truck driver happened to be the daddy of the owner of the company. I'll give him a little plug. You know, it's Lake Hay up in Ava. Pretty good old boy. And he's a little older than I am. He's in his 70s. And he's just full of arthritis. He's had prostate cancer. He's gone through chemotherapy. He said when he delivered the hay, he said, you know, I'm really in pain. And I hurt all the time. And I'm just really feeling poorly and bad and one thing and another. And he was taking the straps off of the load, the 34, you know, big round of bales on the truck. And just Joe and I standing there, and he said, where's your tractor? You see, normally when you're unloading these bales, they weigh about 1,000 to 1,200 pounds each. You normally you get a tractor out there, you know, with a hydraulic lift on it, and you lift these bales off the truck, you know. That's the way they load them, with a tractor and a hydraulic lift. And I said, well, we don't have a tractor here to unload these bales. We're just going to roll them off onto the ground. He looked at the two of us, and he says, oh, no, I can't help you. He said about how bad his back was and about how he had arthritis and rheumatism and 15 other diseases. And I said, oh, that's all right. We don't need any help. Joe and I can unload this. We've done it a couple times before. And so this load, you know, sticking way up there in the air. And so I'm an old man, you know, I'm a little bit slow and old, but I'm not dead yet, you know. So Joe, he jumped up on the back of the truck, and then he reached down, gave me a hand up, and then I boosted him up onto the first bale. That's 5 feet up, see. And so he got up there, he reached down, he pulled me up onto the first bale, and then I boosted him up onto the top bale. Now, that's up there about 15 feet by the time you get up there, you know. Truck, you know, is 3-4 feet off the ground, and first bale's 5. And this load now tops out around 13 and a half feet, you know. And so it'll get under the overpasses. And so here we're standing up here on top, and there's this guy. He's down on the ground. He's rolling up his straps over there, And so he looked at us up there on the load, you know, and he'd never seen this done before. So old Joe, he sat down, and he put his feet up against this first bale, and he starts pushing against there with his feet. And as he pushed with his foot, I stuck my knee in between the two bale, and I used my knee as a wedge, and he used his legs as a lever, using his butt as the fulcrum on the bale behind it, and we just worked that bale up until it tipped off the truck. And this guy's down on the ground, and he said, I've never seen anything like that in my life. He said, my God, you must be in good health. Well, I'm not in bad health, but I wouldn't say that I'm a Jack LaLanne. You know, I'm just average, run-of-the-mill. And so we turned around, and now the two of us are facing the second bale over here. And so we rocked it, you know, up, and it went up about an inch or two. And then we rocked it back toward us, and then we rocked it up, and it went up about 4 or 5 inches. And then we let it rock back, and then I said, okay, Joe, here goes 3. And we got it up about 12 inches, and now we got it up just not quite to equilibrium there. Or fulcrum, but we kept pushing on a little bit, and we got it up there to where it bounced, and we tipped it off the other side. Now there's 2 bales off, 32 to go. Now this guy had straps up and down the truck over there, and I said, now you just take those straps off. And he takes the straps off, and before he got all of his straps off, and before he got all of his straps rolled up and stuck back into the box, we had those 34 bales off and on the ground. And we were standing down there and said, well, now, there's your load. And he said, you know, if we'd had a tractor here, we could not have unloaded that truck as fast as you two guys unloaded it by hand. I said, that's true. That's the truth. You couldn't do that. And that's another reason why we don't waste time on a tractor, because we don't need it. Now, you know, America used to be full of people like that. And this old man now, he said, you know, I can remember back when I was a kid, we used to buck bales and we were pretty tough. Now, there's one group of people left here in America that's still tough and still works. They're called Amish. And then there's a couple of offshoots. They're called Mennonites and so on. Those people still work with horses, and they still get out there in the morning and they put in a day's work. But most Americans do not exercise. Most Americans want to sit on the couch and watch television and eat potato chips and suck Cokes and eat at Pizza Hut. And I don't deny that Pizza Hut pizza tastes good. I like to go into Pizza Hut every once in a while and have a pizza. And I don't mind going to Steak and Ale once in a while and having a piece of meat. Or maybe going into Red Lobster, you know, and having a salmon or something. But, you know, there's processed, cooked foods out there that we Americans have become accustomed to in our diets. And these processed and cooked foods, which taste so good, like MSG, natural flavors. I'll give you a little rundown on mad cow disease. Where does that come from? And MSG. Why is it that the Chinese food tastes so good? Why does McDonald's fries taste so much better than the fries that we cook at home? What are trans fats? I noticed the other day in New York City, did you notice the New York City Health Department banned trans fats? Trans fats, hydrogenated vegetable oil, been killing us for years. And I don't know, somebody woke up the other day and said, hey, we need to do something about that. And I guess someday somebody will wake up and say, my God, we need to take fluoride out of our drinking water, it's killing us. Did you know that fluoride kills 40,000 Americans a year with cancer? Directly attributable to the fluoride, 40,000 a year. And that's not the total number that fluoride kills. It kills a bunch more, but you know, that's called, they call that allegorical or evidence or something like that. Taint direct evidence. But anyway, I like to make these reports and tell you. And then when we get to the end of this diet thing over here, I'm going to make a couple of suggestions. You know, I see people that are obese, and I say to myself, I'll bet you that guy, you know, he's a nice guy, and I'll bet you that guy, if he had his druthers, he would rather weigh about 200 pounds less than that. Now, I don't run around asking fat people if they're dissatisfied with their bodies and their body shape and their body weight, but I just couldn't imagine them wanting to be that way or being very happy like that. And so I'm going to tell you, if you're not that way, let me tell you how to keep from getting that way. There's 18 health laws here, and I'm going to share you some of these health laws with you, and I'm going to tell you what causes this problem. And I'm not here to tell you how to eat. I don't care whether you stay fat, get fat, or die from heart disease. No skin off my back. But as a reporter, my job as a reporter is to give you facts. And then you can take those facts and then weigh them and then figure out, well, then what do I want to do? So the law or an editorial review is a fact organization. And we go out here and we research these facts. And diet is a pretty big subject. And if you've been on a diet, and if you think of diet and what you eat over here as being something kind of personal, and I want to maintain my diet, and I don't want to make any changes, well, we're not here to get you to change. We're just here to get you to thinking about it. Well, listen, I'm just about out of time. I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.